Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. And the Inside Analog Photo radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. Great stuff going on with Fuji. Pack film, 3.25 by 4.25, 4x5, black and white in ISO 100 and 3000, color film, a lot of neat stuff going on. And of course, the Instax format coming to the U.S. here soon. You can check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Great stuff there. Our friends over at Richard Photo Lab for the place to send your chrome, your neg, your black and white. They'll take care of all this great stuff. RichardPhotoLab.com and our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for a camera strap that will not let your camera slide off your shoulder. Great stuff. They're on all my bodies. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group over at www.apug.org, the place on the net to find out everything about traditional process analog photography. They talk about film, they talk about color, black and white, alternate processes, you name it, instant, it's all going on, emulsion making, printing, you name it, gear, everything going on over at www.apug.org. You definitely need to go sign up. They have a great way to support them. You can register for free. They have a deal that's like about $25 a year to get all this great support. You can have your own blog, your galleries. I mean, this is a full-blown deal for anybody doing photography. Anywhere on the net, this is the best place to go to learn about analog traditional process, www.apug.org. We got a great show lined up for today. We have with us Tim Mantovani. Tim is an excellent photographer, went to Brooks, trained under Dean Collins, and he's done this really cool project called Behind Photographers. And what he's doing is taking 20 by 24 Polaroid instant photographs of iconic photographers with, of course, their iconic print. So it's great stuff going on. Definitely want to check out what's going on with Tim's work. And we're going to talk to Tim today about the process, how he came about doing this project, and all the great things that Tim's up to. Hey, Tim, how you doing today?
Excellent. Yourself?
Great. Thanks for joining us on Inside Analog Photo. Today we want to talk about, Tim, Behind Photograph. You have started a really cool project where you've been shooting 20 by 24 instant photographs, Polaroids of iconic photographers with their iconic prints. So when we start here, Tim, let's talk about Tim. Give us a little background on yourself. I know you went to Brooks. You worked with Dean Collins a lot. Tell us about Tim a bit.
I've been working as a commercial and editorial shooter based out of San Diego for close to 17 years now. When I first got out of Brooks, I was the studio manager and first assistant for Dean Collins, which was an incredible experience being able to travel with Dean, work with Dean, and have that foundation to really not only see on the business side of photography what to do and not to do. On the lighting side, it was an incredible opportunity. I think really with Dean, his unfortunate early passing due to cancer a few years ago, I think really was a catalyst to start this project. Dean and myself both kind of shared an unfortunate realization with both of us being diagnosed with cancer around the same time. Fortunately, I was able to kick mine in the tail and get on with life. It's been 8 years now. So you realize that life is short, and when you have these projects that come to mind, you got to just do it. I think every photographer out there has that project that's kind of in the back of their mind is, oh, wouldn't it be cool to do this? And this Behind Photographs project that I started probably about 18 months ago was really one of those things that I had thought about for a while, but finally kicked myself in the tail to get going on it.
I think it's a great project. So, Tim, tell us, how much analog photography are you shooting these days besides this Behind Photographs project?
Not much. From a commercial standpoint, the last few weeks I've been working on a catalog in the studio, and you know, the demand is just that it's got to be digital. More of my personal work is shot analog, shooting a lot more Polaroid these days, I think. Saw kind of the end in sight a couple years ago that Polaroid wasn't going to be around for much longer. I've been shooting 20 by 24, as well as quite a bit of 600 Polaroid on even on assignments where the client wants digital. I'm shooting Polaroid or even film in some cases myself just to have that in my personal files for down the road. Having done this project and working with so many photographers that were all film-based for so many years, obviously some of them have transitioned to digital now. A lot of them haven't as well. They're old enough where they're just like, you know what? I'm going to my grave shooting film. I'm 80 years old, and that's how I've made a living, so I'm not switching now. But really seeing that these photographers, when they were taking these pictures 40, 50, 60 years ago, they had no idea the relevance of what these images would be now. those silver-based pictures are so incredible and so rich now that I really think it's going to be interesting to see 40 years from now, since so few people are still shooting analog, what the value of that medium has looking down the road when there's so much digital media that who knows how that stuff is going to be able to be reproduced or what the collectability is going to be of stuff that's still shot silver-based at this time in history.
Tim, what are you shooting with gear-wise analog? I mean, we'll talk about the Polaroid, the big project here in a bit. What are you using otherwise analog?
I've always been a big 4x5 shooter. Hasselblad has been a format I've loved to shoot with, a Hasselblad with a 40mm for portrait work. Still one of my favorite ways to shoot portraits on location. I mean, I'm just a camera junkie. I'm constantly buying old cameras, taking workshops. I did a collodion workshop earlier in the year just to see what the wet process was like, and absolutely just love the look and feel of that. It's all over the board. I have 35 medium format, large format, 8x10, bunch of junk cameras I picked up at the swap meet. So it's really, to me, that's part of always been exciting part of photography, is just kind of picking the right tool for the job or experimenting with a variety of different formats and cameras. So I'm not really stuck to one format for shooting analog.
Very cool. So behind photographs, let's talk about this. This is shot very uniquely. This is done on a 20x24 Polaroid instant camera, very special camera that was built by the Polaroid Corporation. They have, what, four or five of these in the world, maybe?
Yeah, there's a handful of them. I believe originally six of them were made. There are three that are available for rent, one in Prague, one in San Francisco, and one in New York. So I've been working, started initially with the one in San Francisco, which is run by Tracy Storer out of Left Space Studio in San Francisco, and then working with John Reuter and Jen Trausch out of New York. There's a studio in Tribeca that rents a camera there. So been working with those two rental cameras, and then about halfway through the project, I realized that I was going to have to have an easier way to get access to a camera, so I actually purchased a 2024 Wisner camera, which has a Polaroid back on it, and have been driving that around to get to photographers that otherwise I wouldn't be able to get to the camera. So the fundamental difference between the Wisner and the Polaroid camera is that the actual Polaroid cameras, the processing unit is part of the camera. So basically, there's a roll of negative and there's a roll of positive receiving sheet. And that part of the camera is actually all one unit. And with the Wisner back, I have an actual giant Polaroid back. And you have a ground glass which comes off, Polaroid back goes on, you shoot the picture, take the Polaroid back off to a processor, much like you would do with an 8x10, and then process that separately. So it got some upsides that the camera folds down and is a lot easier. I can throw it in the back of my SUV and go on the road. Where the Polaroid camera, you need like a big U-Haul rental truck to drag that thing around.
Where did you even find a 20x24 Wisner that had a Polaroid back unit available?
Well, you know, you find through this group that there's a handful of people that have these cameras out there, and they're all basically attached through the 20x24 studio in New York. All the film supply that remains is you have to purchase it through them. So I started getting deeper and deeper into this project, and I mean that with time and with money. They said, hey, if you're interested in getting a camera, here's basically two or three people that have them that may be interested in selling them. And I called a couple different people and shopped around, ended up buying one out of Los Angeles. So, I mean, I think it's a format that's appealing to people that love large format. It's an absolute monster process to drag around. I got started shooting large format portraiture and always loved it. So really, with my commercial business getting kind of pushed into shooting so much 35 digital, it really became kind of the anti-digital project for me to kind of get back to my roots in a big way. And when I originally thought of shooting this project, it seemed like the appropriate medium to shoot it in, because I wanted to celebrate the history of living legends of photography and that people have paved the way for myself and for so many others. And if I was going to start calling these photographers and say, hey, I want to do a portrait of you, they've been approached numerous times for this type of thing, and it needed to be something that had some appeal for them to want to see the camera or be photographed with the camera or use the camera. So it really worked well. I remember specifically Pete Turner asking me, hey, why are you shooting it in this format? And I said, well, if I was shooting 35 digital, would you be here? And he laughed and he said, no, I wouldn't. It was because I've always wanted to see this camera, and I made the trip into New York to do it. So I think there's a mutual respect with the changing of the technology and with so many photographers that really were so instrumental in paving the way, starting to fade away, like a lot of the technology, that I think the photographers have really rallied around this project being an important historical project long term, that we've seen these images, but who are these people that made these pictures? And that's the exciting part for me, that this body of work will live long beyond my years and be a way for people to appreciate the image makers of this time.
People really don't recognize, well, here's this photograph. I've seen this on the cover of National Geo or Time Magazine or Life or wherever they've seen this image, and it's iconic, but you don't see the photographer behind it.
Yeah, and photographers, we get our byline is, what, 6-point font, you know, the bottom of the page half the time. I think it was important to celebrate that these people, in so many cases, not only recorded history, but in a lot of cases, they helped define it. They were there back when not a lot of people were doing this. They were doing it for the same reasons we do it now. They were passionate about it. They loved it. Most of them, you say, hey, you know, did you have any idea the relevance of this work? You know, what this would be? And they'd be, heck no, I was just happy I was getting paid to take pictures and do something I love for a living. So I think that that's very inspirational for me too. This, as you know, is a really difficult business and industry, and you have to work really hard. But the common thread I see through all of these photographers is they love what they do, and they're all drawn to different subject matters. So that's what's been really interesting about it as well. Leroy Granis was shooting surfing in Southern California. Jim Marshall was at a rock show in San Francisco, and somebody else was shooting fashion in New York, and somebody else was at war courting that. So everyone had this common bond of this passion and interest in photography, but yet their personal interests drove them to record different subject matters. So I think that when I've talked to photography students, what's your advice? And my advice is go shoot what you're passionate about. Your work will bubble to the top because there's so many people out there just going through the motions and taking pictures that pay the bills, and you have to do that to make a living. But as far as personal work, go out and do the stuff that speaks to your heart, and you're going to get some great pictures.
Oh, definitely. You want to do what's going to drive you. And like you said, you need to do what you need to do for work and business if you're a professional photographer. I do see that more and more now the rise of film is picking up momentum again. Sales are picking up for people that are manufacturing film because I think people are having a disconnect with digital and they want to go back to a craft where they've never even shot film before at all.
I have a few interns that have come through the studio lately, and it's interesting to talk to them that they've never had a film camera. And it's like, wow, it's hard to really even believe that. Talking with someone recently, he's like, oh yeah, you know, my parents bought me my first digital camera when I was in high school and no idea how to shoot film. And, you know, I feel very fortunate that I came from a time where I really learned the craft of exposure and lighting and processing and all of that, because I really feel it gives me an advantage long term, even when I am shooting digital, to understand the nuances that used to get in the darkroom and be able to at least bring that kind of history and understanding to the computer when I have to sit down and work on images that way.
I think the problem, too, is even schools like Brooks anymore don't make you go out and buy a 4x5 camera. They don't teach you film. They don't even have a dark room. They've killed it all. It's all Photoshop central.
The whole green push, which is obviously great, and the waste and the hazardous waste of the chemistry and everything else associated with working in the dark room. I think there's a lot of pressure on schools like Brooks to say, hey, you know what, why are you teaching this? This should be an elective. This is not how things are being done now. People aren't using RubyLith to do graphic design, so that shouldn't be at the forefront of your teachings. That should be something that if someone wants to learn that as an alternative process, they should. So I certainly understand from the mass of people that are going to graduate from these photo schools that a lot of them aren't just going to be digital shooters and don't have any interest in shooting analog or don't want to learn how to do it. But to me, there's just been more and more of a push within myself to go learn the wet plate process, to say, wow, when what's going to happen if there is no more film and paper and darkroom chemistry? At the very least, I can just go do it myself. You know, really get back to being a craftsman. I really feel like as the technologies evolve, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. on one hand, absolutely amazing the time we're living, the technology we're seeing in photography, what you can do, what you can visualize, and what you can do not just in capture, but after the fact from a creative standpoint is incredible. It's allowed so many people that otherwise would have never been able to be photographers to become photographers, which is fabulous. From a business standpoint, it's absolutely killing the industry because once the value of an image became less than a buck on the internet, the appreciation for the craft of photography, to a certain degree, I believe, has really suffered. So what are you going to do? My thoughts are that what you have to do is still be an artist and a craftsman. Some people do that with digital, with Photoshop techniques. Other people like Rob Kendrick have taken on the collodion process and making one-of-a-kind works of art as analog photographers. And I feel that that stuff in the end is really going to be the work that's going to be appreciated because it's still like a blacksmith chiseling away and making something that's really special at the end of the day.
I mean, look at Rob. Rob Kendrick's work is amazing. He does it out of a trailer, out in the middle of nowhere.
Rob, he's taken that whole process of something that used to be done out of, literally out of a covered wagon, and taken it to modern days and got a really nice trailer and done it with such perfection, such a methodical process to it, with the way he has presented it and does the work. But at the end of the day, there's no controlling that collodion once it gets on that plate. It has a mind of its own, and every picture is going to be unique, which is what's so special about it. And it's almost like the Polaroid. As you shoot these 20 by 24 Polaroids and you wait that 90 seconds and you peel that thing apart, and each one of those is going to be unique in some way with the way that that Polaroid pulls apart. That's the exciting thing to me, is that I get into a commercial shoot where I'm shooting 7, 10, 20, 30 gigs of pictures a day on a shoot, because it's like, let the camera rip. Shooting this Polaroid project, in some cases I've only shot one frame. It's now $200 a pop for an exposure, so you're not shooting a lot of film. But what that's allowed me to do is kind of get back to my roots of really thinking about the composition, working with my subject, waiting for that decisive moment to take that picture, versus shoot totally different when I'm shooting digital, because you can, and it's not that one's better than the other necessarily, it's just a different process. And it's been great to get back out in front of the camera with a view camera, not behind a camera. The experience of making those pictures is completely different.
Myself, personally, lately, I've been just really into this whole pack film deal, shooting instant photography, using the new Fuji pack film in 4x5 and typical size pack film, 3.25x4.25, and it just makes you slow down and think, and you have to meter stuff, and you have to exposure it, and the latitude is like shooting chrome, or it's even tighter, and it's just cool to be able to slow down and then peel that apart, and it's like, wow, look at that. I don't know, it's cool.
I've just always been a nostalgic person. I've always been drawn to old cars and things like that, so I don't know if it's just part of my genetic code, is what Dean used to call it, that it appeals to me, where someone else could be like, and I've had people say that to me, like, why in the hell did you shoot this thing in Polaroid? Why wouldn't you have done this with high-end digital back? Almost like I'm an idiot for going about it this way. And ultimately, it's funny, because I have these Polaroids, which are unique pieces of art. I have the photographer write a little bit about the image they're holding on the bottom, and ultimately I have to take that back to digital. I have them scanned with a 4x5 scan back, so still have to get it to a digital medium at some point, but really the uniqueness and the tonal range of these Polaroids, I just love the look and feel of them.
Definitely. Let's talk about this process with the actual 20x24 Polaroid itself. Polaroid has been dissolved into some holding company that's just a name. I think there's some stock left. Tell us about this whole Polaroid process. What's going on with it? How's it work?
Well, as far as I've been told, with at least the 20x24 format, is that there's an inventory of film left that could last potentially another year or so. The bigger problem is the chemistry that is used to transfer. You know, it's basically a reagent which makes the image transfer from the negative to the positive, that has a shelf life. And once the pods have expired, then even the film stock is no longer going to be valid. So the group in New York has an investor. They're getting the machinery that was in the Polaroid factory and trying to manufacture their own pods. I believe trying to come up with an agreement long term to probably get some sort of deal going to make film in that size role. then can keep going. So at this point, I believe that's what the game plan is. I'm not sure when all of that will transpire, but I do know that the inventory of film that's left is pretty limited. Most of the black and white film has been gobbled up already. Even when I try to get a case of film for my camera, it's not the easiest thing to even get an order in and get a case to keep going on my project. So supply and demand, there's enough people out there that have shot with this format that are fine artists that have the financial backing to be able to kind of buy out some of the stock and make sure that they can keep doing their art for a while. I honestly have no idea how much longer for sure that's going to keep going, but the good news is that it looks like the folks in New York at the Polaroid studio really are making concerted effort to try to keep this going so that this really magical format won't go away.
Well, they definitely have the vested interest to keep this stuff rolling, and at $200 a pop, I don't ever see that. It's probably like gasoline now. It's never going to go down. No matter what the price of oil is, it's never going back. So they've hit the $200 a pop per shot price. I bet you it stays there, even if it costs them $3 to make it down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that is, I think, for some people, look at a guy like David Leventhal that shot so much work on that format. Good news, bad news. Bad news is it's $200 a shot, but the good news is everything he shot in the past, the value of it just went up. Mary Ellen Mark has worked a lot with the New York camera in black and white and starting to shoot more in color now. Those people are artists, and this is the medium they work in, so they'll keep doing it because they love the way the format works, and they're going to keep doing it. So I don't know exactly what will happen with it, but we'll see. Time will tell.
So you shot everything on color? Everything's been on color? Did you start on black and white?
No, I've shot everything in color. A lot of the images that are brought in are super colorful images. Eric Miola, Pete Turner, where I knew I wanted to make sure that color was part of it so we could really appreciate the original image and also see the photographer behind it. And that's a unique thing with this format, that these things come out of the camera and you pull them. It's an instant poster. You know, I wanted a format in which I could appreciate the image that they're holding, but also that you could look into these photographers' eyes, have a lot of detail, and really be able to see who these people are. So what I've been doing is actually scanning these Polaroids and then experimenting, printing them out as 30 by 50 so that the heads of the photographers are almost life-size, so that when I do a show, you could walk into a gallery space and be surrounded by all these photographers as if they're standing right before you.
30 by 50, they're getting close to life-size, what, probably 7/8 or whatever the ratio would be, but it's
depending
darn close
on how big they are in the original frame, but, you know, some people are bigger than actual size and other ones are a little bit smaller. I love the ability to not only walk up to the image and see the photograph they're holding, but also take a guy like Julius Shulman, who's 98 years old and still shooting architecture with a 4x5, and, you know, be able to just go up and look at that guy and stare him in the face and be able to really appreciate who he is.
Let's talk about, Tim, the photographers that you have shot. You've got a lot of iconic people here. That's pretty amazing. Let's sort of go down on who you shot, and maybe if you have any couple stories about any interesting characters here.
Gosh, to date, I've photographed 87 different photographers. So a lot of people say, well, you know, how are you determining who you're including? And a lot of ways, I think that instead of me finding all these people, some of them have found me. And I mean that in the way that this project has kind of taken on its own life. It's almost like this road trip where I said, I'm going to pull out of my driveway and I'm going to drive across the country. And I don't know exactly where I'm going or where I'm going to stop, what I'm going to see and what I'm going to shoot, but I'm going to do it. It really started off with photographing Jim Marshall, another photographer, Michael Zagaris, in San Francisco back in December of 2006. From there, this thing has kind of just taken a life of its own, where every time I photograph a photographer, they're like, hey, have you considered talking to so-and-so? They've really helped take me to other photographers, some that I were familiar with, some that I wasn't. The fact that Jim Marshall says, hey, here's Mark Seliger's phone number, call him and tell him I said to do this project, that's opened up that door where otherwise if I send a blind email, it may never even get seen. So been a mixed bag of how these photographers have kind of come to be in front of the camera. Some are people I just emailed and said, hey, I absolutely love this picture you took. I'd love to get you involved in this project. And obviously as you start to build on it and you get Neil Leifer with his Muhammad Ali Sonny Liston photo, then all the sports photographers are like, hey, Neil's in it, I want to be in it. Or, you know, Bill Epridge with his photo of the Kennedy assassination at the Ambassador Hotel. Nick Ut with the girl being burned by napalm in Vietnam. These are all not just icons that we appreciate as photographers, but these are icons that are appreciated by pretty much everybody in this country that's seen any kind of photography over the last 30 years. Every one of these pictures has a story behind it, and hearing these photographers tell the process of making those images has been incredible. I mean, a guy like Herman Leonard from New Orleans that shot tons of the great jazz musicians, he brought in his portrait of Dexter Gordon. And the interesting thing is that most of these people, this was personal work. Herman wasn't getting paid for that. He was shooting 4x5. He'd go set up in the clubs ahead of time, put up his classic backlit, you know, strobe, and then go into the clubs in the evenings and shoot these pictures that had been pre-lit. So very methodical, technical process that he went through to get those images. We look at him now and go, you know, wow, how did you get that shot at that time? But it was very well produced and executed. But, you know, to hear him tell these stories of going into these jazz clubs, working with these musicians that are no longer here, are just incredible, incredible stories.
You did Harry Benson. You know Harry. I mean, he's great. Just to talk to him and hang out, it's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And the story with him and the Beatles stuff must have been really cool to shoot, Harry.
Yeah, he was one of the last people I photographed about a month ago back in New York. He'd been someone I'd been corresponding with for over a year and a half, trying to kind of coordinate with, and every time I was in New York, he was gone. But, yeah, what a character. You know, he didn't even want to be with the Beatles. He had an assignment that he was supposed to be on in Africa. His editor at the paper said, you know, I want you to go shoot the Beatles. And he's like, I don't want to go photograph the Beatles, you know. What a pain. Biggest blessing in disguise, he said, that ever happened. He was working with them. They got the news that night of the pillow fight shot that they were going to be coming to America. They were number one, and they wanted them to be on the Ed Sullivan show. And that's when they asked him if he wanted to come to the U.S. with the Beatles, and that's how he ended up getting the photos of them getting off the plane and everything else. These guys are living history books. I've tried to do what I can as far as documenting their stories, their imagery. And there's also another photographer, Paul Waldman, with the LAMP Project, the Living American Master Photographers Program, who's been doing audio transcriptions of some of these people. And Paul's been at it for years. It's interesting. He just recently contacted me. We realized that we had met like 14 years ago when I worked for Dean, and he had come to Dean's studio and done a portrait of Dean and recorded him. I have utmost respect for Paul, him chronicling these photographers and getting them on tape or on video, on film, again, so that, you know, these precious stories are going to be preserved for future generations to appreciate and also to educate people.
It's a great, great project you're working on, to be able to document this stuff. Let's talk about tech-wise here with the camera. What kind of glasses on your Wisner, of course, with the Polaroid stuff? How much light does this need? Are you burned in with heavy strobe, hot light? What are you doing on this process?
Sure. I've got a 600-millimeter lens that I'm using for the majority of this stuff. I'm shooting with strobes. You just have to use a ton of power. Even at f32, you're getting about 3 inches of depth of field with this camera. So one of the things that has been limited from the creative standpoint is while I'm having these people hold these portraits or these pictures, I'm limited with that depth of field to be able to pull focus on their eyes and on the print as far as kind of how they hold them. So it's either like right in front of them and they kind of lean over the top of their print, or kind of on the side. Not a ton of different ways to compose these things. Using a big softbox in close, which is the way I've done the majority of my work, you know, even my athlete portraits for years have been pretty simple. And then decided early on just to go with a simple background. I really wanted to make these pictures about the person and their image, not have the background compete with that. So I've been just going with a little bit of light fall off on a gray sweep, and very simple.
What exposure time are you doing with this film? What ISO is it rated at? How's that worked out?
This film is the equivalent of what would have been like type 59 Polaroid. So it's 100 ISO. Rated at 80, and then get into your bellows factor. I mean, you're down to probably about ISO 50, you know, shooting at a 60th of a second with the strobe. I'm just trying to get the literally having my assistant walk the softbox in until I see it in the frame and then just pull it slightly back until it's out. So it's as close as it can be to them without being in the shot. So I'm getting as much power as I can on them, the strobe being as close as possible. Most cases, I'm going with two heads through a softbox with power packs on full tilt, juiced all the way up so I can get the most I can out of that pop.
Now, you're going to be shooting again here coming up next at, what, Photo Plus in New York here in a few weeks?
Yeah, the big challenge has been to get the photographers to the camera. So photographers that have been based in New York, hasn't been a huge deal to try to coordinate with them over time. A lot of people that live outside of an area where there's camera access, I need to try to figure that out. So with so many people coming into New York for Photo Plus, I'm actually taking the 20 by 24 down to Javits this year, renting a room downstairs and trying to get people while they're in town. I've got the camera for 3 days down there, and also probably one of the last big pushes for this project. Pretty good lineup so far, just a couple weeks out and starting to hear back from photographers. So I probably have another 15 people I'll try to shoot while I'm there in a few weeks.
Now you're going to shoot your Wesner, or are you going to use the Polaroid camera?
No, I'll use the Polaroid camera because it's just a lot easier instead of trying to drag mine across the country. Just rent the one in New York. Working with the Polaroid cameras, I have to say it is much easier of a process. Camera comes with a technician. Don't have the issue of having to take the back off the camera and take it to a processor, so it's a little quicker. And it really frees me up to focus on just taking the picture versus dealing with the mechanics of running the camera as well. So whenever possible, I prefer to shoot with the Polaroid cameras. I don't have to worry about packing it up and shipping it to New York and worrying about it getting broken on the way.
Exactly. Now, you can still obtain film for your rig. So have you been able to hork stuff for yourself to keep it? Will these guys let you buy, here, I'll take two cases? How's this come packaged? How do you get this stuff?
I end up buying a case of film which has one roll of negative and three rolls of positive. Positive receiver sheet is thicker than the negative, so that's kind of how it works out as far as just physics of how the stuff rolls out. And the last case of film I bought was before the price went up, and it was $2,500, about 40 exposures. So, I mean, I have a case of film right now I haven't cracked into that I bought a while ago, just trying to kind of keep ahead of it. I would say that that case of film for the people I need to shoot on the West Coast, at least that I have lined up, will probably get me through the bulk of this project. People say, well, when are you going to stop? And I don't know that if I can keep shooting and they keep making film, I don't know that I'll ever stop. I think it's just one of those ongoing life projects. Short term, my goal is to have a book published. I've been talking with a few publishers and have a gallery show of this work. So as far as the bulk of getting the people that I've wanted to photograph in the studio that have agreed, gotten through a big chunk of that list.
Tim, what photographers have you not been able to grab yet that you really want, that you haven't been able to get a hold of? Is there anybody that you're just really wanting to grab that you haven't been able to get yet?
Well, there's several photographers that I've tried to approach that just have said they're not interested. You know, Irving Penn's a classic example of somebody that just never has wanted to be photographed and isn't interested in being photographed. And, you know, I'm not going to be able to photograph him. So it is what it is. It'd be great to have someone like that included in the mix, but I respect the fact that that's his choice and he doesn't want to do it. So, I mean, it's been an interesting response. Some people that early on kind of respectfully declined to be involved have come back to me and sent emails and say, hey, I saw, you know, your write-up in this magazine or talked with so-and-so and they said I really should reconsider doing this and when are you going to be back for a shoot. So there's a handful of people out there that I'm still pursuing. Some of them have said no and I know that means no, and some of them have said no and I know that means that it was no at that moment. Sometimes you have to kind of be persistent. Right out of the gate, I'd say there's some of the older photographers, that guy like Robert Frank I'd love to photograph, but he hasn't responded to my inquiries, and I know that this isn't necessarily the kind of project that he may want to be involved with. So I just got to keep doing what I'm doing, and again, every time I photograph somebody, another door opens. I've met some incredible people along the way whose work I really wasn't familiar with up front, learned a lot about a lot of photographers and a lot of the history of photography that otherwise I wouldn't have.
This is such a really cool project to be a document, these iconic photographers and what they're doing with their prints and the whole Polaroid thing with the super large format. It's just, it's a cool project. Really neat deal.
Thanks. been having a lot of fun doing it. It's like one of those things they say, be careful of what you ask for, you might just get it. I had no idea when I took those first two portraits that it would, less than a couple of years, have evolved to this. It's one of those things, I know I've kind of been racing the clock with the medium and not knowing exactly what was going to happen with that. It's great news to hear that there's some potential that there'll be another solution to keep going, so that 20 by 24 shooters out there, as well as 4 by 5 and 8 by 10 Polaroid shooters, are going to be able to keep working in that medium.
So, Tim, tell me about some of the other projects you're working on. You have just completed a lighting DVD training series with Software Cinema that was originally, of course, founded by Dean Collins. Let's talk about what you're up to there.
Sure. Outside of this project, people might know my work for my portraits of athletes, which really kind of evolved out of my relationship working with Dean. When I was an intern at Brooks at Dean's studio, his rep at the time was a guy, Jim Hancock, who later became the director of marketing at No Fear. That gave me the opportunity early on in my career to start photographing athletes, which I did a lot of large format portraits of athletes when I first got out of school, still doing a lot of that kind of work for editorial and advertising clients. But when I was interning with Dean, he had just come out with his three-dimensional contrast video sponsored by Chimera. Fast forward 17, 18 years, and we looked at the content in that program and said, man, this is really incredible stuff. That there's so much information out there now on how to use Photoshop and how to do this and how to do that. But really, the fundamentals of lighting, nobody did it better than Dean. So Gary Burns, who was Dean's partner in Software Cinema, and I sat down and said, you know, how can we get this information back out there? It's kind of a tribute to Dean. So myself, Bill Holshevnikov, who was original videographer, and also a student of Dean that's done a lot of video lighting seminars, got together and went to Chimera and Profoto and said, hey, you know, we'd like to recreate this content, kind of update it with current imagery and integrate digital technology and get it back out there. As far as just breaking down the fundamentals of lighting, I think it's one of the best programs out there. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn because Dean, it's all Dean. It's just me regurgitating what he came up with. But for anyone who's just starting to get into wanting to learn studio lighting and seeing light and understanding how it works, I think it's a great resource.
It is. It's a great, great set of training. And guys at Software Cinema have been putting out some nice stuff. It's just great work they're continuing on that you guys created and with Dean, and it's pretty neat stuff. Tim, tell me about Behind Photographers. Is your website? Can anybody go look at any images? I know you've had some stuff in some magazines. You've got some more publications coming up here. Where do we find out what Tim's up to, and let's look at some of these just great iconic works?
Sure, my website's just my last name, Mantoani, mantoani.com. On my website, there's Behind Photographs area, and I've got all the Polaroids that I've shot to date up there, along with some press coverage and then some fun stuff, some behind-the-scenes pictures of, you can see the camera and some of the photographers signing their Polaroids. As I shoot, I'm just adding to it. It's all right there.
Yeah, this is great, and we look forward to seeing you here at Photo Plus coming up in New York, grabbing some of this stuff and actually getting you on some video for Inside Analog Photo TV, just to show people what you're up to in this really cool, great, historic, iconic process and all the great work you're doing, Tim. Thank you so much today. I really appreciate you joining us, and this is just beautiful work you're doing. Really neat.
Great, thanks, and I look forward to catching up with you in a couple weeks in New York.
Thanks, Tim. Take care. Well, there you go, Tim Mantoani. Great stuff with Tim. This is such a cool project. You guys, if you got to go check out his website, see what's going on, and of course, just support this type of work because this is a way to record the history of photography, what's going on. It's great to see this being done on an instant process, a super large format. This is just really, really cool stuff. And of course, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Fujifilm over at FujifilmUSA.com/professional, Richard Photolab over at RichardPhotoLab.com, and Upstrap at Upstrap-Pro.com. And, of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography Users Group over at www.apug.org, the place on the net to find out everything about the traditional photographic process. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. And, of course, you can find out more information about the program and what's going on over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.